Welcome to the Sports Lawyers Association podcast. The SLA is a nonprofit, international, professional organization whose common goal is the understanding, advancement, and ethical practice of sports law. With over 1,000 current members consisting of practicing lawyers, law educators, law students, and other professionals with an interest in law relating to professional and amateur sports, the organization has a wonderful membership filled with experience, insight, and knowledge, giving podcast listeners a peek behind the curtain of the sports law world. For more information about the SLA, visit sportslaw.org. Today's episode is Championship Building in the NFL Offseason, a discussion with Mike Tannenbaum and Greg Tolliver. Mike Tannenbaum is an NFL insider for ESPN and the former executive vice president of football operations for the Miami Dolphins. Prior to that, he served as the general manager for the New York Jets. Mike has a wealth of experience in the NFL and sports business as an executive, entrepreneur, and advisor. Greg J.R. Tolliver was a fifth-round selection of the Miami Dolphins in 2003 after leading the nation in receiving yards per game as a San Diego State Aztec. Following his on-field career, Greg has become a successful business owner and stays involved in football as a broadcaster and mentor to athletes ranging from the high school to professional levels. And now, here's your host, Brandon Leopoldis.
Thank you for joining us for another SLA podcast. My name is Brandon Leopoldis, and I am the SLA Outreach Captain for Southern California, and I'm pleased to be joined by NFL insider and longtime NFL executive Mike Tannenbaum and former NFL player Greg Tolliver talking about the NFL offseason and what goes into the preparations for every football season right after the Super Bowl. So we're recording this just a week or so after the Super Bowl, and I want to jump right in to give everybody a behind-the-scenes look at the preparations that it takes. Mike, you've spent a lot of time as an NFL executive. What are teams doing just a week after the Super Bowl now that the coaches have been hired and we're starting to enter that free agency period and season ticket holders aren't going to the games? What's that look like?
Well, you try and put your master plan together, so you're assessing your options on both the pro side, meaning free agency, trades, cap casualties, and then obviously getting ready for the draft as well. But I think the most underrated aspect of team building is to correctly assess your own roster, which contracts are going to be up, what the area of needs are for your team, and being honest and sober in your own evaluation. So you're looking at your own team, you're looking at your options from, again, the veteran side, the pro personnel side, and then the draft, and then juxtaposed all that information, you're looking at salary cap constraints, you're looking at your cash budget, so you're doing some macroeconomic planning as well. And you have about 3 to 4 weeks to do all that before you really start hitting the league year, which begins about the second week in March.
Well, Mike, you had mentioned the salary cap, and this is kind of an interesting year because by all indications, it seems like the salary cap's going to be going down this year. So what does that do to an NFL team's budget and the outlook for the roster?
Yeah, I think we're going to see the middle class get squeezed, meaning we're going to see really good players that aren't frontline guys. And we could look at one of the Super Bowl teams, the Kansas City Chiefs, for example. They have two players, Sammy Watkins, who's a really good player, maybe a tick below Tyreek Hill. And then someone like Daniel Sorensen, who's going to be a free agent, their talented starting safety. I think it's going to be really hard for them to keep both players because as Patrick Mahomes' cap number goes up, then that sort of increase is going to come from someplace else. And I think you're going to see good middle-class players like those two get squeezed with the salary cap going down.
Well, Greg, it's interesting. He talks about really talented players. You were certainly one of those leading the NCAA in yards per game coming out of San Diego State, go Aztecs. And what was that process like for you that first year right after college season ended? How did you prepare as a rookie coming into the league in order to get ready for the combine and then those team workouts?
I mean, it's really interesting to hear what Mike says, because as a player, it's totally the opposite, right? Like players are designed to, number one, get their break in. You know, when guys leave that 17-week season, the bodies are pretty beat up. The mind is pretty beat up. And it doesn't matter whether you come out as an NFL champion or you were 4-12 and didn't make the playoffs. The first 2 or 3 weeks of that offseason is about getting your energy back. You know, guys are taking vacations, spending time with family, eating crap, hanging out, right? All the stuff that you have to do to basically like recharge yourself. And then a few weeks in, it's usually right after the Super Bowl, you know, guys kind of start getting serious. You step on the scale and you normally play at 202 and you weigh 214 and you're like, oh God, now I got to get back into shape, right? And so you start trying to do stuff between the time that you have to be back at the facility for OTAs or whatever it is. You don't want to come back into the facility fat. Like, you don't want to come back to this facility weighing 214 and you just played at 202. So a lot of guys will spend time trying to figure out how to not like get into great shape, but at least get into good enough shape where they can walk back into the facility and nobody looks at them sideways. So I think for a player, depending on where you are at the roster, take your recovery, get your rest, start your body moving again. If you got any injuries, take care of those so that when you walk back into the facility, Mike still respects you as an athlete and not as somebody who took his offseason for granted.
Well, Greg, it's interesting that you talk about getting your mind right during that period. We've talked a lot about that, especially for younger players. What does that look like in terms of the business side of it? Not just about going back into the gym to get your mind right. What are those discussions and who are you talking about really the business of football with during that time? Or is that not a discussion during this time in the NFL offseason?
That's a great question. And it's hard, right? Because a lot of guys, you know, that first year is you're training for the combine, training for your pro day, fighting to make a roster, fighting to stay on a roster. A lot of guys end up closing out the off the field conversations pretty early into that process. And, you know, I get it. You probably have to, because at the end of the day, if you're not 99% focused on staying in the locker room, you're probably putting yourself in a bad situation. But a lot of guys, I think now, are starting to realize and understand that, man, the NFL is a phenomenal platform. It's a platform that can be leveraged into other passions, into other revenue streams. And once you get old like me, you know, and you say I'm a former player, it's not the same. It doesn't hit the same as being a current player. So I think a lot of guys are starting to realize that, you know, I need to go ahead and get my P's and Q's together while I'm still in the NFL to help build some of the things that I want to do off the field, whether it be real estate or investing or foundation work or whatever it is. And I think there's a mentorship process that usually happens. It happens with somebody. It's either the agent or the financial advisor. It's whoever the player really trusts to help them kind of go down that road. But in that second year, I really believe that that's one of the most important times for a player to really start focusing on what can I do as a business, right? As a player who is also a business, what can I start doing to leverage this platform that the NFL has, like almost nothing else out there can give you?
Yeah. And you talk about platforms, it's different for those team platforms, right? Because you have the coach, you have the general manager that typically are going to stick around a little bit longer than some of those players. Mike, what's that look like when you have a new coach coming in, when teams have either fired or a coach or a coach has retired or left an organization, and now you have that new leadership? What does an NFL office go through during that turnover with a new head coach or a new general manager?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things like we touched on, which is you want to assess your roster. And I had the great fortune of working for Coach Belichick a couple of times, and I think nobody did a better job of that than he did. You know, just in terms of like looking at the roster in a very honest way, like what are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? Is a player ascending? Is he descending? Is he durable? Are there any off-the-field issues? Is he being paid appropriately? How do we want to build our team? What are our needs? What are our musts? How do we win the division? What are the challenges that the other three teams in our division pose for us? And then how do we win for today and develop for tomorrow? And I think that's something that you spend a lot of time thinking about. If you don't win for today, candidly, in the NFL, you're developing for, you know, the next staff. So you got to win enough for today, establish credibility, and then also develop for tomorrow. So from a strategy standpoint, it's really through like two different lenses. You're working intimately with the head coach about how do we put the best roster on the field this year without being irresponsible about what the future looks like as well.
Well, I'm glad that you bring that up about building that roster up, because the front office is like a team roster on the field outside of the fact that they're not putting on shoulder pads and running out there. How often does the business side of football, the season ticket sales, the sponsorship stuff, bleed into a front office. Most people don't get to see how all of that operates like a big family. Is that something that the general manager or head coach is even worried about at this time of year or during the year?
Well, I would just say, you know, ultimately, you know, the situations I've been in, it's been about roster building and putting the best team on the field. With that said, you want to be a great teammate with people that are running the business side, and you want to help. You want to be a great listener and figure out ways you can move the needle in a significant way that's efficient. So while that's not your primary responsibility, you know, ultimately we're all working for the same organization. We have the same logo on our jerseys, and what can we do within reason to help each other?
Now, Greg, you know, as a player, you have to help those other people on your roster. Otherwise, it's going to be a real long 16 or 17 weeks. What does that look like when you're back in camp or you're getting those OTAs? How do you look at the team roster, or do you as an NFL veteran?
Yeah, you know, I think the question you asked is a great one. So in 2003, I was with the Dolphins, in 2004. And in 2005, Nick Saban came in and replaced our head coach at the time. And, you know, I remember, well, let me go back. So 2003, I had a wide receiver coach under Dave Wannstedt. In 2004, my wide receiver coach got fired. And then they hired another wide receiver coach under the same head coach, Dave Wannstedt. And, you know, going back to what Mike says, as a player, those changes are like pivotal, right? So for me, I was a fifth round draft pick. I spent the last 6 weeks on IR, but I was a great practice player, like phenomenal. And so I never got a chance to play in games. I was only active, you know, one game. I was inactive the rest of the season on IR. The game that I was active, I didn't even get a chance to play in. And so when that new coach came in, like, how does he know how good I am? So I was always worried about that, right? Because, again, I came out of a college career that was awesome. I had a great practice year as a rookie. I just didn't have any game film, right? And so when that new coach came in, I was concerned. And I said, well, I remember asking Coach Sullivan, hey, have you looked at any film on me? I mean, all I had was practice film. I didn't have any game film. And he kind of like blew me off, didn't really give me a straight answer. And at that point, I kind of knew like, oh, shoot, I'm going to have to fight for a roster spot again. I'm going to have to prove myself over again. And so I think as a player, you know, man, the NFL, we know as players, it stands for not for long. And if you're not in the mindset that every single year I get into this locker room, every single year it's a privilege that when I put my key fob up against the little security thing that the door pops open, then you're going to get your spot took at some point by somebody for some reason. So I think most players, we're not roster watching more so than we're saying, let's do everything that I can, come in shape, play well, stay injury free, do all the things that I can as a player to give myself the best chance to stay on the roster. And it sucks when you get cut, especially when you get cut and you think you're better than three or four people ahead of you, right? But that's just kind of what the game is. And I think from a player standpoint, you know, I tell all the guys that I work with, just focus on you, focus on you, focus on you. It's a numbers game. You don't see a lot of the algorithms and stuff that Mike and his staff are going through. You can't control it. Go out, catch every ball thrown to you. And then when the roster cuts come, hopefully your key fob still works.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because, Mike, the not for long league is certainly the same way for the NFL front office. If you don't win games, you're going to – that key fob's not going to work very long. And so what is that process like? It's clearly a known within the NFL that you have to win in order to keep your job. But what's that like when you know that turnover's coming at the end of a year? You've certainly been through that process of – that front office turnover as well as the on-field turnover. What does that look like when you get to the end of the year, you get to after the Super Bowl, and you have to make those decisions? What's that process like, and when do those decisions get made?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, similar to Greg, you know, I feel for me, you know, I started as an unpaid intern, and I was fortunate enough to run two teams, but every day I had the mindset that nobody was going to outwork me today. So I was first guy in, last to leave. I felt like that was going to give me my best chance to be successful. And I always knew the day would come for myself as well. But I didn't want to be one of those people that started off as an intern, became a GM, and then put his feet up on the desk. So I think once I got the job, I actually worked harder just to prove to everybody that, you know, there are no shortcuts, and we're going to, the expression I always had was every rock, every day. Like, we are systematically going to be more relentless than anybody else, and we're going to scour to improve this team. And if there's a practice squad player in Canada, let's go get them. And that was always like the mindset I had.
It came and got me, Mike. I was in Canada in 2007.
There you go.
Should have came and got me.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we would have won a little bit more at the Jets in 07. And as it relates to moving on from coaches, and I've hired and fired a GM, obviously a lot of players. I would say, like, over my career, I got better at it. And there was a book that really impacted me. The book was called Radical Candor. And really, the book is about how to give people feedback. And the biggest takeaway from it is investing in people and telling them things they don't want to hear is a great way to try to prevent the other conversation, which is even harder to have. And let's have this conversation. Let's stay in this moment and work really hard on what has to be fixed, really, because both you and I want to avoid that other conversation that's even more difficult for both of us. So we're going to work our tails off and invest today in what needs to be better. And candidly, the coaches that were the best, and I was incredibly privileged to be around guys like Coach Parcells and Belichick, they would do that. They would tell players, they would tell coaches, hey, this is what needs to be better. And, you know, there's a great expression that, you know, you don't get fired, you fire yourself. And I felt like I had an affirmative responsibility, you know, either from a staff standpoint or from a player standpoint, that before that very difficult conversation had, people had a chance to course correct.
Got it. Now, Greg, you've been on that path, right? You've been released. It's happened to you. What would be some advice that you would give to an agent or a lawyer or those that are really working with those players? Because we don't talk a lot about the former player. We always focus on the bright lights and the shiny objects. What's that like, that transition period going from being a current player to being a former player? And what's something that could have made that process easier for you from the respect of those advisors working with you?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question. So, you know, when I got drafted by the Miami Dolphins, I was fifth round pick 2003, number 169, right? And I flew from San Diego to Fort Lauderdale in like a week, and we did our OTAs. So coming from west to east, you always get there later, right? And so when I got to Davie, to the facility, there was already one meeting that had happened before I had even gotten there, right? So from an agent perspective, or anybody that's working with a pro player, don't make your guys guess on what the timeline is going to be. The one thing about the NFL is it's a system. It happens every single year. So if your player goes into a situation not knowing what's going to happen, that's your fault. You got to figure out a way to systematically communicate to your players in a way that when they get into the building, they know exactly what's going to happen. That did not happen for me. I missed a meeting, and I didn't know I was going to miss a meeting, but Coach Keith, who was the special teams coordinator for the world champion Tampa Bay Bucks this year, lit in my butt the first meeting. And so when I got there as a wide receiver, I had just led the nation in yards and was second in the nation in catches. I thought the Miami Dolphins drafted me to come in and catch 80 balls and go for 1,000 yards and maybe score like 9 touchdowns, right? That was my thing. Chris Chambers was there. I'm going to come in. I'm going to be that number 2 or number 3 guy, and away we go. Well, guess what? As a fifth round draft pick, as a wide receiver, your ass better be ready to play special teams. And it was nowhere in my ecosystem, in my thought process at all, that special teams was in my cards. And so when I get into the meeting, Coach Keith walks up to me and he asks me a question that he taught everybody in the meeting before that I wasn't at. I had no idea what the answer was. And you talk about getting lit up. Oh, you think you good because you caught catches? You going to run down? You going to cover this kick? I don't know who you think you are, blah, 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 right? And that was my kind of introduction to the NFL, that I wish if I would have had an advisor or somebody who said, JR, listen, you went in the fifth round, you're 169, you're coming east to west, so you're probably, or west to east, you're probably going to miss this meeting. So just so you know, when you get into that building, your primary focus needs to be on special teams, because until you can prove that they can trust you on the field through covering kicks, they're probably not going to put you on the field as a wide receiver. So my advice to anybody that's working with athletes is exactly what Mike said. Do the homework beforehand for your guys. Have hard conversations with your guys before they get into the facility so that they don't end up having to have a hard conversation that leads to them not being able to get back into the facility at some point.
Really good advice there. Mike, I have really the same question for you. Working in that front office, just like being on the field, the not for long league is certainly that way with executives. What advice do you have for the general counsels, AGCs, or the aspiring lawyers that are looking to work in a team atmosphere, whether as a lawyer or otherwise, knowing that an ownership change could be the end of your days there? What's some of the career advice and advice you have for those folks?
Yeah, serve and listen. Those are things that really have always served me well. And take me through your preparation process for a meeting. I always felt like, I would tell you that innately, I'm not the most confident person. So I always gain confidence through preparation. I've never been in a meeting where I didn't know more about the other person. I knew where they went to school. I knew their political disposition. If they had one, kids' names, wives' names, girlfriends' names, charities. Nobody knew more about the person they were sitting across than me. That gave me tremendous confidence. And, you know, I say that all the time. You want to be an NFL head coach, it's going to come down to you or the other person. You should know something about the owner. Is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? That doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but you got to be able to put three or four sentences together about what their passions are. What's their charity of choice? How they make their money? And then it comes down really to very few fundamental concepts, in my opinion, which is be the first one in, the last to leave. The answer is yes, and the answer is yes with a smile. And really what the last one's all about is over-deliver. Like when you're given an assignment, over-deliver. Find out what keeps your boss up at night and then solve that. Because when you do that, you become indispensable. So it's not about what your assignment is. It's about what's their pain point. And if you can solve your boss or supervisor's pain point, you will have tremendous, tremendous job security.
Great advice there, Mike. Real quick, what are you up to nowadays? What's going on now that you are not in an NFL front office? But tell us a little bit about what you're doing today.
Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. So ESPN, right in the center of my universe, and it's been a great platform. Get to talk football with people that are really smart and talented and make me better. I teach a course, The Business of the NFL at Columbia. I sit on the board of an all-natural, healthy energy drink called X2 Performance, which has been terrific. And over the last 8 or 9 months, I started the one and only professional football think tank. And it's a consortium of former head coaches and GMs. And we get together and put out a newsletter called The 33rd Team. You can go to the site, 33rdteam.com. And one of the things that we do, which is a big passion of mine, is we mentor a lot of young people who are a lot of men and women who want to get involved in sports. So they do a lot of research projects. We evaluate them and help them get along. And we put out sort of like thoughtful pieces about things that impact the NFL.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you've surrounded yourself with some really good people. And Greg, I know that you surround yourself with some great people. So tell us about what it's like being a former player and what you've been up to since your playing days ended.
Oh, man, since I retired, I was a head football coach and an athletic director at a small private school in Newport Beach. I've done that for 6 years, but most of my former player hat has been in consulting. I've done a little bit of business consulting, starting to do some consulting, helping rookies maximize their first 2 or 3 years of their career. I'm very involved in San Diego State. I'm a broadcaster or analyst for Extra Sports 1360 for San Diego State Aztec games. I love San Diego State. I love the San Diego community. So I spend a ton of time in San Diego doing what I can to help and give back from, my high school to, San Diego State University. I'm a board member on Startup San Diego, which is an ecosystem that supports small businesses in San Diego. So, yeah, man, kind of like Mike, just doing everything that I can to use my experience to make the road a little bit easier for people who are going down the same path that I did.
Well, I appreciate it. Greg Tolver, Mike Tannenbaum, we thank you for being on the latest SLA podcast. And we want to throw some information out for those of you that are in the SLA or looking to join the SLA. You can go to sportslaw.org for more information about the group. And if you are a member, we have a lot of valuable resources after you sign up, whether it's the membership directory or case materials or information on things that are going on in sports and a valuable newsletter and update that goes out every week. We want to thank you for joining the SLA podcast, and we look forward to speaking with you the next time. Thanks.